La pendule fait tic-tac, tic-tic. Les oiseaux du lac pic-pac, pic-pic. Glou, 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 font tous les dindons. Et la jolie cloche ding-ding-don. Mais boum, quand notre cœur fait boum, tout avec lui dit boum. Et c'est l'amour qui s'éveille.
Rugby friends, and welcome to a new edition of the French Rugby Connection with moi, Véronique Lindieu, and...
with moi, Tom Dixon.
Tom, a miracle didn't happen. France finished second this year.
This is true, but miracles did happen. We had one of the most memorable championships with the best rugby I can remember. Seriously, parts of it were best games for decades, or best part of games. You know, France, when you're sitting in rugby grounds, people go on about a famous semi-final and they played the All Blacks in 99. And in Britain, people remember a Lions try from about 30 years ago. The games from this championship are up there with that. But as a collective of games, not one in particular, the first half of France against Ireland, Ireland against France, because it was in Dublin, was best rugby I've seen in decades and should stand out. But also in French history, they will remember the spanking of England. And so it's the competition that will have the memories of greatness rather than any individual match, I think.
Absolutely. I have to say, what a thrilling and exciting and captivating Six Nations this year. I've never seen such a Six Nations like that, you know, with a few shock, a few ripple, like we're saying, the big spank from France to Les Anglais, and that fantastic, you know, first half between Ireland against France, which was out of this world. The intensity, the speed, the passion, the power was incredible, absolutely incredible.
The teamwork, yeah. Them playing together and knowing where they all were, and the ball kept moving.
Sorry. Yes, and what really, really pleased me, and I mentioned that during a chat I had with Chris Jones and on BBC World Service last Sunday, is really pleased by the fact that the top countries that are ranking the world rugby are currently Northern Hemisphere one, so Ireland and France. So it's very refreshing, you know, because usually it's New Zealand or Australia. Yeah. England doesn't have a healthy position right now. I think they are number six.
This is true. Mustn't forget South Africa, the current world champions. But indeed, the tide is turning, but we're not there until the silverware, or goldware in this case, comes home to the Northern Hemisphere.
And let me tell you, there's some good news. So six players have been selected to receive the best player of the Six Nations tournament. Who do you think they are?
I'm sure they're all Toulousains who play for France.
really? Yes, you're right. Yes.
I'm sure it starts with Dupont.
Dupont, that is correct, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Antoine Dupont.
I would have thought... oh, gosh, Greg Aldrich was spectacular, but he was injured for some of it. Thibaut Flamand is a bit of a new discovery of the competition. I'm not sure he'll
come
be
on
up there.
You mentioned, come on, there's two that really should be at top of your mind. So Antoine Dupont, yes, it's
a
no-brainer.
Thomas mm-hmm. Ramos.
Thomas Ramos, of course, wow.
Damien Penno maybe as well.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Thomas Ramos, the way he played, he executed his kick, you know, I think it was 7 out of 7 in the last game against Wales. And Damien Penno was a thing of beauty when he scored those try after tries. And actually, he's the top scorer of the competition because he scored 5 tries.
Oh, fantastic. I'm not sure. Yes. Certainly, top scorer in terms of number of tries, top scorer in number of points. I think that's the other person you were just mentioning, Monsieur Ramos.
He got
84 points.
Exactly.
And do you know who came second in that point scored table?
Tell me.
Johnny Sexton, the great Johnny Sexton, with less than half of what Thomas Ramos. It was 84 to 35.
Wow.
So that's 150% more for Thomas Ramos.
Yes.
So chapeau.
And let's not forget the full Irish players as well. The nominees are Hanson, yeah, Doris, and Keenan as well.
Can we use the word Irish for Hanson? I expect he plays for Ireland. That's fine.
That's interesting. Yes, I think his mother was Irish, but he's Australian. And he made a few comments that were a bit during the press conference, which was highlighted by a few articles in the Times by Owen Slot, for instance. And he did say, oh, well, it was a joke. But sometimes you have to be careful to how you express yourself. But, you know, he's only young. He's only 23 years old. But still, I hope, you know, he would have learned from his lesson.
We'll see. The Irish diplomacy will take over from the Australian direct and to the point, do you think?
Yeah. But anyway, it was a brilliant player. So France delivered towards the end. I have to say, it would have been so good if they would have played like they played towards the end of the tournament when they played against Ireland. So, because they didn't start the competition that great, you know, I mentioned that I would qualify. They started on second or third gear. They were okay, but nothing special. They nearly lost against Italy. Scotland was comme ci, comme ça. And it's only, you know, when they got beaten by Ireland, they suddenly woke up.
They were awake at the beginning of that match against Ireland, but certainly they were slow to start with. Do you know who got the wooden spoon?
Italy, I'm afraid.
How many points did Italy get?
Did they get 5 points or?
No, they got 1 point. Out of all the brilliant teams, who do you think they got that point in?
Ireland or France?
La France.
Yes.
So Italy would have been 0 points, null point, had it not been for scratching a point against France, which is very, very good for Italy to get a point against France. They were fantastic. So hats off to Klee. I do think. Did Italy get a wooden spoon? Five defeats out of five games. I think that is a wooden spoon.
It is.
The ambiguity comes in if you come last, but you win one of the games. And I don't think that if you win a game and you come last, I don't think that's a wooden spoon. It's like winning the champ. The converse is if you win the championship, that's great. But if you get the Grand Slam, that's brilliant. And I think the wooden spoon is the other reflection of the Grand Slam. So Italy did get it this year. But it isn't awarded every year, just as the Grand Slam isn't won every year.
Right.
Does that make sense? It's a bit nerdy.
It's very nerdy. I wasn't aware of this. So insofar as you are sure of what you are saying.
No, many people disagree. Everything is contentious.
but a bit saddening, you know, for Italy. But again, you know, Italy is the team that played really well against teams that you wouldn't have expected, like France and Ireland. And then, you know, they kind of blew their chances when they played in Stadio Olimpico against Wales. You know, so a work in progress, must much more improved version, that's for sure.
Now, weirdly, having said that this is one of the most exciting tournaments with the best rugby we've watched for years, even decades, isn't the result, the standing, the order of the results, exactly what we would have predicted at the outset?
I would have predicted France to win. But no,
obviously, and away match against Ireland was always going to be a difficult. We'll have to rewind your tapes. I know you
Yes, but having said that, they won three times beforehand against Ireland. So, and to be honest with you, it's I would rather France lose against Ireland now than during the World Cup in the quarterfinal, you know, to be honest with you. So it's out of the system now. They had that victory. And for France, to be honest with you, they played brilliantly the first half, but they learned from the lessons regarding the second half. They played out of 18 games. They only lost one game under Fabien Gatier.
Yes.
It's only, it was the Irish game. So,
yeah. No, indeed, it's great for them. But the predictability is the point I'm coming back to. Okay, Ireland and France at the top. I would say that we said at the outset it wouldn't be a Grand Slam for France because being away to Ireland would be too difficult. I think we did say that. Many people said it. Italy at the bottom, I think everybody predicted as well, with regret because we wanted them to get some points. But England and Wales changed their whole leadership setup. New coach, new teams, just before the World Cup. Of course they were going to do badly. So Italy at the bottom, followed by England and Wales, with Ireland and France at the top, put Scotland third. So I put it to you, Madame Véronique, that was an extraordinarily predictable outcome of the competition. So how come it was so damn exciting?
Yes, by some decisions, for instance, taken by Steve Borthwick by having Marcus Smith starting and putting Owen Farrell on the bench and having as the captain, you know, a few things didn't go his way. I remember putting on Twitter, on a tweet to Stephen Jones, saying it's an experiment for Borthwick. We'll see how it pans out. And it didn't work out at all. But having said that, I have to say that England really redeemed themselves when they played against Ireland. So I was listening to the Radio 5 Live after my visit to the open day of Exeter University with my daughter and husband. And for the first half an hour, it was absolutely great. I was amazed. I was really amazed. England was playing well comparing to last year, but it's when the red card was given by Jaco Pepper to the English player.
Freddie Stewart.
That we decided to switch off the radio because it was a foregone conclusion. You can't play proper rugby with 14 men against 15, you know. So it kind of spoiled. It spoiled the game because lots of people said they would have thought that Ireland would have won the game, but Farrell and his teammates, you know, really, they work really hard this time round. Yeah. They really redeemed themselves.
Yes, they did pick themselves up. I don't think they were ever going to win, I'm afraid. And you know what I'm going to say about referees and dodgy decisions, don't you? I always say that very strongly that I never criticise the referee because it's impossible to get everything right. But for once, Veronique, I do agree with you. I think it was clearly an error. It clearly got it wrong. Did it ruin the game for us people? Yes, of course.
Yes.
Did it change the dynamic? Yes, of course.
Yes.
Would Ireland have prevailed anyway? Yes, they would.
maybe. I'm still a bit dubious because they were back to their old form. You never know. Again, it's as if, you know, we didn't have a crystal ball.
You also have to look at the recent tradition of England playing the last 20 minutes of a game. They leak points so much they need leaky protection pants. Just as Ireland were picking up, England were shutting down. So, yeah, a shame and a bit of a horrible end to the competition. But that can't take away from the quality of the competition. That the big day was the day before, really, where we had the most fun.
Like you were saying, the last 20 minutes is where the English players been suffering the most. And we could see that during the game against Les Bleus. They couldn't even run towards the end. So they really need to come up with a better training plan, fitness plan, because there is a massive gap right now between the French, the Irish, and the English. Because I know we did say the French looks very, very tired, but they are 2 weeks off in between using, you know, the high-intensity training regime. They're extremely fit. And maybe England needs to look again at how they train the boys.
I disagree, actually. I think in this day and age, it's highly unlikely that the England boys aren't fit enough. But their way of playing, putting 11 men into a maul, is itself exhausting. You can't all push Jamie George over the line. The mentality, it slows them down. If you're losing by 40 points against France, unlikely to be the fastest sprinter of the week. But also, if you're running backwards, defending for so long, and then just attacking so intensely, that's what tires you. I think you have to start on the assumption that all global teams have pretty much the same fitness. I know we can then say, but Tom, you're going on about the minutes played between Ireland and France and the end of season versus beginning of season between Northern and Southern Hemispheres. So I take all that on board, but the bigger picture is I don't think it's fair to say that professional people who are far fitter than us are not as fit as they should be when I bet they put in every ounce of effort the same because it's what they do. I think there's a game plan issue and a mentality issue is more important that sees them slow down at the end of the game.
There's a mixture of young guards with old guards as well. You know, but I'm going to tell you something. You know, one of the big weaknesses of the French team prior to Fabien Gatien taking on the reign was that the French team was very similar to the English team. The last 10, 15 minutes, they were really, really struggling. You know, and many times, you know, they missed out some opportunities. You think they are fit? I'm sure they are athletes at the end of the day. But maybe the training regime and the athleticism and the fact as well, another important factor that we didn't mention, that you mentioned last week, is that the guys, the English guy, you know, they don't really play often together. If you look at the French team, you got 8 players from the Stade Toulousain, and you got, you know, Ramos, Tamac, and Dupont, who plays win all the time together. So they know each other really, really well. For the Irish team as well, majority of the Irish teams are from Leinster. So there is that camaraderie. They know how to play together. There is a sense of cohesiveness. And whereas England, you know, it's kind of old guard with young guard. They haven't really gelled yet. So you got 6 months to do that. So I'm sure they will improve.
You could say they've got 4 years and 6 months to do that, because they're putting a team together with a new coach. It's possible that this World Cup isn't their primary goal. But yeah, hell, I paid very expensive money to get tickets. So I hope they're trying their best. So the Six Nations, I mean, hats off to everyone, really. Even Wales showed that they had the mentality to pick themselves up and put a good game against Italy. Italy were brilliant. Wish they could have had more points. England, we saw the lowest and good highs, as you said. Scotland, very strong all the way through. I told you, the first weekend of the World Cup, they're down in Marseille playing South Africa. And isn't that a key match that they must be targeting? Can you imagine Scotland turning over South Africa? That would be wonderful. May not get them out of the pool, but it'd be wonderful. And then France and the Ireland were simply brilliant. And again, I say France losing in Dublin is no disgrace. It doesn't tell us that one team is better than the other. At the moment, I don't think anyone could win in Dublin. Although, of course, we will see a very similar match again in a few weeks' time when Toulouse and Leinster meet in the Champions Cup in Dublin.
It would be like a déjà vu again.
It would be. like a déjà vu, as they say in England. And then, of course, they'll be meeting in the World Cup final in a few months' time. So let's get used to it. And that World Cup final will be on French soil.
Definitely, starting on the 8th of September, finishing on the 28th of October. And yes, anything would happen. So I had a really good conversation with Chris Jones and Bob Skinstad, former box. And it was very clear, you know, Six Nations, that's it, is done and dusted. But what happens during the World Cup is that everybody have the chances to a certain extent. You know, it's very much a case of one game at a time. That's a big, big silverware to go after, but nothing is guaranteed. Because if you look back in 2007, I think England got completely slaughtered at one game. And then they were in the final during the World Cup. I think it will be the usual suspect that will do well. And maybe Argentina.
Well, have you seen just this week, New Zealand have announced their new trainer for after the World Cup.
What is his name again?
His name is Scott Robertson.
Yes.
Obviously, French rugby connections. May we just say that an ex-Perpignan player is doing rather well and is going to be the all black coach. Scott Robertson played for Perpignan in the early, I think, 2003 to 2007-ish, I think, when Perpignan were playing Wasps in a couple of competitions and doing well. So he is the current coach of the Crusaders. He's a bit light on international experience at that level. He's been involved with the youth teams a few times. So he's coming through with people he knows. Maybe New Zealand is focusing on their youth and bringing in a previous youth coach. But it's a shoddy treatment of the incumbent and the current team. It's not very respectful just before a World Cup to say, hey, this is our new man who's going to lead us to heavenly prizes. But after this World Cup coming up, it doesn't do well to enthuse the current players or a staff. So quite a strange thing to do. But good for Scott. I look forward to seeing the fruits of that. But it does raise the question, what New Zealand are we going to see at this World Cup? Are they even going to get to pass the quarterfinals? Because as you know, the World Cup is very weighted to one side.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, exciting times.
We'll see. And World Cup in 6 months' time. this week we got Six Nations for women starting on Saturday.
Just when you thought the Six Nations was finished. Six Nations starting this Saturday. I'm not sure what TV channel it's on in Britain, but in France, they're playing it on France 2 on Free to Air, which is marvellous. I'm very happy with that.
The UK, it's on BBC iPlayer.
Fantastic.
And okay, let me check. So the first game on the 24th of March, it would be Wales against Ireland. Yes, it would be shown on BBC iPlayer, followed by England against Scotland. It will be shown this time on BBC Two as well as BBC iPlayer. So that's good. Very positive with that. And then Italy against France, BBC iPlayer, the day after at 3 o'clock on the 26th of March.
And it all ends on the 29th of April with Le Crunch or La Crunchette at Twickenham. How many tickets are they going to sell at Twickenham for a ladies' match? They've been talking about selling it out. They've been talking about 40,000. They've been talking about 60,000. I hope it's many. It's Saturday, the 29th of April at 2 p.m. is a fantastic time to go to a rugby match at Twickenham. Don't hesitate, dear listeners. You can go out for lunch beforehand. There'll be food in the ground. There'll be lots of children there, I imagine, because the tickets will be affordable. Some schools and clubs, I suspect, will get free tickets. It will be a bit of a carnival, and hopefully the weather will be out for the day as well. That's 29th of April, Angleterre, France at Twickenham. And I say it's 2 o'clock. Actually, that's French time. It's probably 1 o'clock English time. So I wish I could be there.
And I highly recommend anybody who hasn't seen a match between England and France. It's absolutely mesmerizing. Those ladies, no, they don't like being called ladies. Those athlete women do take no prisoners. You know, they are really, really going for it. You know, forget about shy Violet. and also, you know, I'm going to, I can't say eat my beret, but I would love France to win against England because they haven't beaten England for many years. So it's payback time. You know, Les Bleus didn't beat les Anglais for 18 years. I don't know how many years it has been since the Les Bleus, you know, want to beat les Anglais in that.
It's an interesting point. You raise the word professional. Basically, England and France are pretty much the only mostly professional teams. I believe that's still the case. Listeners may want to correct me. But certainly in the rankings for the Northern Hemisphere, England and France are the main two teams. I did last year, I was lucky enough to have France versus Ireland here in Toulouse at the Stade Ernest Vallon. And I went there, and the quality is amazing. The Irish athletes were amateur. They weren't paid. I bumped into the scrum half a few weeks later by chance at the Sevens that was also at Ernest Vallon. And when the penny dropped that, hey, I paid money to watch you play scrum half on the main pitch and you were brilliant. It's fantastic. She was there paying out of her own purse for transport and even kit. They have problems. The amateur people have problems. They sometimes have to buy their own kit. So support them as much as you can. The quality of the game is extremely good and the commitment is great. What tends to happen is you get more rugby. Because they don't have the strength to do the Jaminet 80-yard kicks, they tend to play things by hand a lot more. And that makes for good fun rugby, especially in the summer. So watch out for that, I recommend.
And talk a bit about professionalism. So yes, you're absolutely right. The English squad is the only professional body which is being paid full-time. Mm-hmm. And regarding the French rugby, I think they're not full-time, but they can train 75% of the time. We're getting there slowly.
Yeah, so Stade Toulousain don't have as many players as they do the men's game, but one of the Bleuettes, the French players, had a job in the Stade Toulousain shop for X hours a week. So she had her income via rugby, but for doing a job. So it's obviously the point of being a rugby professional is that you can spend all day in the gym. But if you're working in Southern as well, you can spend all day in the gym because it's there. So it's one of these hybrid, not quite professional situations.
Yes.
They're good for everyone concerned. But
yes.
Got to help each other.
Yes, because I believe the New Zealand players are full-time professional as well. So, yeah, so there is some inconsistency in the competition. Hopefully, it's going to be resolved one day.
Oh, when rugby has money. Bring that day on the scene.
So, Tom, the top 14 is going to start again this week. It's nearly the end.
It is. It's the top 14 is back. How exciting. Brackets. No, it's not.
Why not? Because this is one of the most exciting, the most difficult league in the world.
I know it's the most competitive and the closest, and the superstars and the internationals who aren't playing. Because it is not a double. It's not a clash with an international. So it's still us paying them. But they need a rest. So and said, hey, yeah, aren't I lucky? I am allowed to play my key players, Antoine Dupont, Romain Tamak, Julien Marchand, Cyril Bay, Thibaut Flamand, Pietro Movaca, Thomas Ramos, François Croix. They're all back in Toulouse, and yet the manager has not named them to play this Saturday against Castres. And why not? One is it's taken for granted that after an international campaign, you had the week off. Two is the following week, we're back in the European competition. And you don't want to risk your players being knackered and injured and off colour when you're still doing rather well in Europe. And thirdly, we're away to Castres that nobody really enjoys anymore. It used to be a local derby, but even the fan club doesn't go because the fan club considers themselves disrespected. And even though it's the closest away trip, is the only one they tend not to go to. So it's just a blur. Castres ought to be an easy win for Toulouse because Castres are near the relegation zone. They're only 3 points off of being relegable, being 11th in the table. But that said, are Toulouse going to make the effort? We'll see. It's one of those toss of coin. Send out the youngsters and hope they do well. And we'll see how Castres gets. That's very selfish. You're asking about the top 14, and as ever, I answered about Toulouse.
But for a very good reason, because Toulouse is topping the top 14 with 67 points out of...
After 20 games. So correct. But we're 11 ahead of the next competitor, which is La Rochelle. La Rochelle and Stade Francais have been swapping second place recently. But they're having a battle. La Rochelle, 56 points. Stade Francais, 55. And Lyon, 54.
And Bordeaux-Bègles,
53. Yes. So very little in it. But with Toulouse ahead with 60, it is a very impressive win, very impressive position to be in. But yeah, if there is fun to be had, it's going to be those people struggling, thinking of getting a place in the playoffs. It is important for Toulouse to be in the top two so they don't have to have the playoffs, because if they're playing in two competitions, it'll be knackering for the players. So the fixtures this weekend, Castres against Toulouse opens the weekend on Saturday afternoon, and then four games together, as is Canal Plus's want. Lyon against Toulon, that's not that bothered, probably a home win, both top of the middle of the table. Perpignan against Montpellier, probably another home win, even though it's against the lie of the table. Montpellier are ninth and the current champions. Perpignan are 12th, but they've been having good fight recently.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. Yeah, I think Montpellier probably stand a chance.
Montpellier would probably be favourite, but I like the idea of Perpignan waking up and taking advantage.
Yes, and have you heard that Richard Coquerel is likely to join the Montpellier staff very shortly?
I try to keep on top of all the transfers of players and staff, but it's just too hectic at the moment. Clermont against Brive. Normally would think that'd be a terrible game. Actually, Clermont are 10th, near the bottom of the table. Brive are way bottom at the moment, I think. If they lose this weekend, it'll be very tough to get out of that. So another home win. Bayonne against Pau. We like Bayonne. We like Pau as well, but another home win. Bayonne haven't lost at home at all this season. And they were up to the top three or four at one point. Bordeaux Bergler against La Rochelle. Rochelle probably won't have its internationals, and they've got injuries as well. So Bordeaux are fifth. I'd call that a home win. And that leaves Stade Français against Racing 92. They're, Stade Français is third and Racing 92 is eighth. So even though they're close, and even though Racing normally has the upper hand over Stade Français, the classement says it should be Stade Français. But I question that. That could be a good game to watch, really. But apart from that, I'm saying all home wins except for Castres-Toulouse, where Toulouse will have a rubbish match but will win with a bonus point in the last 20 minutes.
And just to come back to what I was saying earlier, Tom, Richard Cockerill, who was the England forwards coach up until last Saturday, will vacate his role and will join the top 14 Montpellier.
How fantastic.
He speaks French fluently.
Bravo for him.
Yes, exactly. So it says good news for Montpellier. Not such great news for Steve Borthwick's staff, but he was part of the coaching staff since September 2021 under Eddie Jones. So, yes, I suppose he wants to have a change.
Yeah, indeed. It's also promotions. That level can be diagonal as well as upwards. And I'm sure the pay packet can change as well.
Yeah.
As well.
And also, you know, it's not the first time that Thierry Charcot coached and played in France. He's done it before, and he's went there, moved there with his family. So he always had the ambition to come back.
I didn't know that. Or I had forgotten that. So thank you for illuminating that. Two has been going on. It's difficult to follow when there's so much other rugby going on. The match that catches my eye is 29 all between Rouen and Aix-en-Provence. What a match that would be. It's still cutthroat. There's Ritz lost at home 23-28 to Nevers. So that's a high scoring tri-fest as well. And my team, Colomiers, are up to fifth, but struggling to stay there. Your team, Van, is eighth. So not doing very well. Biarritz down to sixth. I'd like to see them doing better. But it's same story with Oyonnax, very much clear at the top by a country mile, followed by Grenoble, and followed by people scrapping it out for the playoff places. So Pro Day 2 is as competitive as ever. I believe you have news on Pro Day.
Yes, congratulations. Mathis Gatier. Yes, you are right. His surname is Gatier. He's the son of Fabien Gatier. And he's just had his first Pro D2 contract with...
Colomiers!
Exactly. It's been this week.
Oh, fantastic. I must get more into Colomiers. Out of season, I was following them quite closely. And going, Friday nights have been very cold recently. So I'll wait until the weather gets warmer and I'll be a fair weather supporter.
Very good. Rugby friends, I hope you had a wonderful Six Nations few weeks, just like us.
Oh, yes, it was fantastic. It was a real treat. Some of the players that just had stories on their face. Did you see Rini Antonio scoring a try against Wales on his 50th cap? And the smile on his face and those around him congratulating him. He couldn't have been happier. It's been a rollercoaster of emotions. So much better emotions than worse emotions, I think. Rugby has really cheered people up in this competition, don't you think?
Definitely, definitely. I'm very pleased as well about the progress of the French team, because one of the ambitions of Fabien Gatier when he took the reign of the French rugby team 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, 2019, his ambition was to make sure that France would be in the top three, which he has achieved, because they were ranking number two, to make sure that France would be a respected rugby nation. And I think he has achieved that objective as well. And for French people, to fall in love again with le rugby. And 100%, yes, there's so much excitement, you know, in Paris right now regarding the World Cup happening within 6 months' time. I've never seen Paris like that, and it's going to be a great celebration of rugby starting on the 8th of September.
Absolutely. In the meantime, we have the top 14, the Pro Day Deux, the Ladies Six Nations, the Sevens International Tournament. And so there's plenty to keep on tuning in to hear us giving our opinions, some of them right, some of them wrong, some of them you may agree with. And sometimes you and I, Veronique, may disagree agreeably. But keep tuned in. It's been fantastic rugby and shall continue to be so.
And let's not forget, we don't call Six Nations ladies. We call it Six Nation women.
I must get better at that. I shall write it out 10 times.
So on that note, au revoir.
Veronique, au revoir. La pendule fait tic-tac, tic-tic. Les oiseaux du lac pic-pac, pic-pic. Glou-glou-glou font tous les dindons. Et la jolie cloche ding-ding-don. Mais boum, quand notre cœur fait boum, tout avec lui dit boum. Et c'est l'amour qui s'éveille.